The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 226. Before we jump in, make sure you leave us a rating and review wherever you're listening to the show. I greatly appreciate it. I love hearing from you, and I love shouting you out, so I look forward to hearing your review. All right, we have a lot to talk about today. We have a lot to talk about, so I'm going to jump right into it. The fact of the matter, y'all, is that a lot of people believe that we're going to have a housing market crash that's going to be worse than 2008. There are some factors present in today's housing market that are worse than 2008, so it's definitely something that I want to talk about. And we're also going to talk about some things that you should do if you plan to buy a property anytime soon. So make sure you listen to this all the way through. This is not going to be too long, but make sure you listen all the way through, because at the end of the day, I don't want you to end up in foreclosure. So I need you to get these tips that I'm going to talk about in a bit. So first, I want to talk about some data that was extremely surprising to me. In Q4 of 2008, the median home sales price in the US was $222,500. And in Q1 of 2024, the median home sales price was $420,800. That's an 89% increase in the median home sales price. And I know for many of you listening right now, the home prices have increased way more than that since 2008. But that's not the craziest part. In 2008, the median household income in the US was $66,280. And in 2022, it was $74,580. That is only a 12.5% increase in wages. Now, I want you to ask yourself if you see the problem here. What is the problem here? Let's keep going. The next stat is just a reality check, y'all. So in Q4 of 2008, the average 30-year fixed mortgage interest rate was 5.84%. And in Q2 of 2024, the average rate was about 7%. So the median sales price of a home increased by 89% since 2008, and wages barely increased by over 10%. As we know, interest rates, they've had their ups and downs, highs and lows over the years. But the biggest issue here is the ridiculous increase in home prices. And what I've realized is that the media keeps pushing this interest rate thing. But people seem to be ignoring the fact that the home prices have run up like crazy, not only in the last 4 years, but since 2008, when there was obviously the crash. And this is a problem. And homes are simply way less affordable now than they were in 2008. So let me explain and break this down with an example. If you have a pen and pad or your phone or something, maybe you're driving, but if you're not driving, write this down so you can really understand the gravity of what I'm about to break down. So at the end of 2008, like I mentioned, the median home sales price in the country was $222,500. The median household income was about 66K. Average interest rate was about 6%. So based on that salary, you could afford a mortgage of $1,650, because that would be 30% of your income. I don't recommend going above that. Ideally, your take-home pay, but for this example, we'll say gross. If you put 20% down on that median-priced home of $222,500, your mortgage would be about 1750, which would be doable for somebody making 66K and frankly would be doable for a lot of people. Now, it's gotten a lot worse in 2024. I'm just going to be real with you. The median household income as of the last census was $75,000. Based on that, someone could afford a mortgage of $1,900 per month. But here is the problem. The median home's sales price at the end of Q1, $420,000 and some change. If you put 20% down on that home, the mortgage would be about $3,100. Now remember, anyone, any household making the median income could afford $1,900. But the median home sales price, the mortgage would be about $3,100. That's a $1,200 gap that someone making 75K cannot reasonably afford. Okay. And again, for many of you, you wish a home was 420,000 where you lived, right? So do I, but it's not. So let's listen to a clip that talks about how this is impacting people today.
The problem is getting worse. It's not getting better.
According to Realtor.com, the median price for a home in Phoenix is around $520,000. Head west to Goodyear, prices average about $20,000 more. Go east to Gilbert, $100,000 more. Mark Stapp, a professor of real estate at Arizona State University, says everyone is battling high interest rates and high prices at the same time.
In fact, we haven't seen home prices fall. They've remain rather stubborn. And I think that has much to do with the available inventory.
Available inventory throughout the valley is slim. Stapp says Arizona is locked in because homeowners with mortgages at 5% or lower are not giving up those rates.
But you're going to start seeing them spend money on home improvement projects. So it's going to be more crowded at the Home Depots and the Lowe's and the places like that.
Economist Jim Rounds estimates you need to earn $75,000 to be considered middle class. That's about $10,000 more than the median household income in Phoenix.
So the very low income folks are the ones I'm the most worried about, because no matter how they adjust things, they're still going to come up short. And they will benefit when we start to see the prices come down. It's just going to take a little longer.
Experts can only predict when they think things will improve, but Stapp says a set of factors need to fall into place first.
Interest rates have to come down. Wages have to continue to rise. Inventory has to grow substantially for available homes. And we have to have enough change in inventory that the supply and demand effect begins to work and it stabilizes the price of homes.
So they've been promising that the interest rates would come down significantly, and it just hasn't happened. So to be honest with you, I don't recommend that any of you put your hope in that, because it may never happen. And then he also mentioned that wages have to continue to rise. Remember, they said to be in the middle class in Arizona, you need to earn about $10,000 more than the area median income. So if your job gives $10,000 yearly raises, you can drop it in your review. You can email me, so we can all apply, because that's the job that's looking out, all right? And I do agree with him that inventory needs to increase to stabilize the housing market. It's something I've talked about for a long time. And I'll also say this, real estate is local. In one of my recent YouTube videos, I talked about how inventory has reached pre-pandemic levels in some areas. And I think I talked about this on the podcast too. So real estate is local. What's happening in one area is not happening in another. So, you know, Florida, the condo market is crashing, but it's not necessarily crashing in other places. So let's listen to a clip that talks about how this is impacting millennials who are trying to buy homes.
If you look at the top of the list in terms of most expensive, most of them in California. San Jose, you've got to make $361,000. L.A., it's almost $300,000. San Diego, almost $260,000. And then San Francisco. I mean, that is pricing out an entire generation from this housing market.
Yeah, I think that's true. We don't see very many first-time buyers in these markets because they are well-established markets where prices are very high. If you look at the calculation of what it costs to buy, it takes the, you know, over $250,000 to buy a home versus what it costs to rent. It's expensive, but not as expensive as it is to buy. And so many are making that decision in these large markets to rent. That's why we see homeownership rates in these large markets trail behind the typical U.S. housing market. So it is challenging in these markets. But even though it is a pretty challenging market, there are some areas where we do see opportunities, in particular in the Midwest and in the South, where home prices remain relatively more affordable. And although it is a dire situation if you compare to 4 years ago, where we're looking at much fewer homes on the market, compared to last year, we are seeing an increase and a significant one. Homes on the market for sale are up over 30% compared to a year ago. And if we look at the below median price point of $200,000 to $350,000, homes in that price category are up by 40%. So we are starting to see a bit of a turnaround, a bit of improvement, but from what is still a pretty dire situation for young people.
I think it's an absolute joke that people need to make hundreds of thousands of dollars to afford an average home in some cities. The median income can't support those prices, and that's a fact. And it means that the average person simply cannot afford it. So if the average hardworking person going to work every day and doing what they got to do can't afford it, then you tell me who can. Think about that. And if you live in one of these markets or anywhere else that's super expensive, I recommend that you consider investing out of state. That's the only way that I personally was able to become a real estate investor. So make sure you check out the free training I have. It's in the description of this episode, and it's a quick watch. It'll break down the process for you. As a reminder, make sure you stay till the end. We're going to discuss some things that you can do if you want to buy a house in 2024. So there's another factor that I don't hear many people discussing online, and I believe it's very important for us to discuss it. The next thing we need to talk about is institutional or corporate landlords. Many believe that they are the reason that homes are unaffordable. So let's look at a real life situation.
Brand new neighborhoods with brand new houses seem to pop up weekly in Central Florida.
Yes, they do. But in some of these communities, the homes are not for sale. West News' Meredith McDonough takes us into these rent-only subdivisions.
I previously resided in New York and came to Florida for the good weather, more family-oriented environment, fresh air, sun, beaches, all that good stuff.
Joanna Becknell was looking for the perfect home, and she found it at Binion Reserve in Apopka. With so many new neighborhoods being built in Central Florida, this one is unique. The homes are not for sale, but for rent.
I was surprised. You know, normally you see apartment communities going up, and to see a community of homes going up. And I said to myself, goal, next year, I'm going to get a house. And here I am.
This community is one of nine owned and operated by American Homes for Rent. You may have seen some of the rental home communities in Apopka, but also at Sky Lakes in St. Cloud and Celery Cove in Sanford. Brent Laundrie is the Executive Vice President of Development for AMH. He flew in from Atlanta to take us on a tour of Windward Hills across from the Orlando-Apopka Airport.
So in Central Florida and really across America, we are short housing in general, and we believe that we need more housing options, quality options of all sizes and shapes for families in all sizes and situations. We build 3, 4, and 5-bedroom homes and create a lifestyle for folks seeking a single family option with a low maintenance lifestyle and flexibility of leasing.
So let me acknowledge one thing. Not everybody wants to ever buy a home. Some people need to rent right now, and others want to rent long term. They just don't want the responsibility that comes with homeownership. People have their different reasons. Maybe they want to invest elsewhere. It's all good. Okay, so now that we got that out of the way, for those of you who are watching, and I clear my throat on purpose for a reason, for those of you who are listening, excuse me, I know you're interested in buying a home. That's why you're listening to this podcast. These companies who do build to rent want you to get so comfortable with renting from them, they want you to forget your dream, and they'll prefer if you never bought your own home. That's a fact. If you need to rent for right now, it's all good. We've all been there. It's okay. Just don't get too comfortable. Don't lose sight of your goal, and don't lose hope, right? Don't lose hope, and don't lose sight of what it is you're trying to do. All right, so I need you to brace yourself, because the level of nonsense, I'm telling y'all, the level of nonsense in this next clip is unbelievable. And the fact of the matter is, they want you to own nothing and be happy.
This neighborhood will have 101 homes with a community swimming pool and playground. We toured a five-bedroom home. It's 2,300 square feet and about $2,900 a month. That includes mostly everything except lawn care, which is $50 a month.
At $2,900, the rent includes your property taxes, insurance, HOA fees, and obviously your monthly rent for living in the community. And that's a one-year lease minimum for our residents.
Inside are the amenities of a brand new build without the headache of home ownership.
One of the greatest benefits we offer for our resident is peace of mind, knowing that repairs to a water heater or an appliance or the roof, as you mentioned, we take care of that for them as part of their monthly rent.
This really resonated with Joanna when it came to finding a home.
I don't want to be responsible for landscaping, plumbing, electrical, that AC unit.
So there are a few things I want to point out. The rent includes HOA fees, property taxes, insurance, and there's an additional $50 charge per month for lawn care. So it sounds like you can't even mow your own lawn or choose who you would have mow your lawn. I mean, what if you can get somebody to do it for $25 or $30? That would save you some money. And I also don't understand why a renter has to pay any sort of HOA fees. It doesn't make any sense to me. If you have to rent a home for right now, I do not recommend renting from one of these companies. I would go with a private landlord or with a smaller company. It's a better experience and they're not going to tack on all these fees, or it's less likely that they're going to tack on all these fees. I had somebody leave a comment on my YouTube saying that she rented from one of the companies that I was talking about in the video, and they charged all these ridiculous additional fees to make it more expensive to reside there. So be careful. The clip also mentioned the headache of home ownership, which I thought was such a joke. While home ownership does have expenses that you need to take into account, these are things you can prepare for in advance. And I'm a long distance landlord, and repairs are not nearly as difficult as they make it seem. Is it annoying having to make calls and coordinate stuff? Yes, but it's not difficult. It's not that hard. Most repairs can get set up with one phone call to a handyman or a company to fix whatever it is. It's not that deep. So don't believe these lies they're telling you that it's so difficult, so you should just rent from us. All right. Now I'm warning you, this next clip you are not going to be happy with, so let's check it out.
These rental home communities are popping up all over Central Florida. In Brevard County, Condev, a family-owned real estate development company, is building the Landings at Viera, located at Pineda Boulevard and Stadium Parkway. Rent will range from $2,600 to $3,500 a month. The developers say the American dream of owning a home is changing with the needs of their customers.
That American dream of housing may not be in the form of ownership all the time. I think, you know, there are other parts of the world where very few people own homes.
Which is interest rates and the cost of home ownership in the current market environment. This is becoming a very, very viable segment where people are choosing to, as Chris pointed out, to rent a home that they might otherwise have bought. When this community is fully built out and mature, you're going to walk through it and it's not going to look or feel any different than one of the for sale neighborhoods, you know, down the street.
Developers say you'll see more and more rental home communities in Central Florida because the demand is only growing.
As a single mom, especially, it's difficult to be that one income in the household and not having to come up with tens of thousands of dollars, but still being able to provide my family with that same sense of home and togetherness and harmony under one roof without feeling like we're crammed in a sardine can is really amazing.
Meredith McDonough, West 2 News.
So in a recent YouTube video I did, I spoke about how so many people will be forced to sell their condos in Florida because of the rising fees. And now all of these build-to-rent communities are popping up in Florida. So I know I can't be the only one who thinks that that's not a coincidence. To me, this honestly seems planned, and I believe all of it is connected. The majority of the net worth for Americans is in the value of their home. So to assume that is no longer a dream for most of us is absolutely crazy, especially for y'all listening to this podcast. And anyone listening who's renting, I'm sure you're not choosing to rent, as they said. You might be in a position where that's the choice you have to make right now, but the fact of the matter is homes are just so expensive, so maybe you have to rent, and that's okay. But don't believe the lies that these folks are telling you. They want you to rent from them forever. They want you to be a customer of theirs forever. That's why they're saying these things when they go to the media. They're trying to desensitize you. Don't fall for it. Now, when I read these stats about institutional investors, I'll be honest, it was very shocking. So depending on the source, and there's obviously a lot of sources out there, I read through a bunch of stuff. Institutional landlords own between 3 to 5% of single family rentals nationwide. Now, this becomes a problem when they can charge. Now, this becomes a problem when they have a large market share of single family homes in a particular area. Okay. According to Urban Institute, as of 2022, institutional investors own 28% of single family homes in Atlanta, about 24% in Florida, and just above 20% in Charlotte. So we all know what's happening with institutional landlords now, but it's important to know how this all started. And I think you'll be surprised by some of the things that we found out. So Wall Street firms entered the single family rental market after the 2008 crisis by purchasing foreclosed homes. Since then, their influence has continued to increase, and the number of corporate landlords today is significant across the entire U.S. housing system. Single family and multifamily housing, manufactured housing such as mobile homes, subsidized affordable housing, and student housing. Many entities such as hedge funds were able to leverage their financial resources to purchase foreclosed homes wholesale. Instead of selling them, many investors chose to enter the rental market, providing a vital service at a time when many families were facing credit challenges. And that's from an article from NBC News. So back when there was a crash, these folks bought all the properties. Fast forward to now, many Americans can't afford to buy a home, and these folks are either buying homes to rent out or building homes to rent out to those who can't buy. So you can't afford to buy a home, we'll rent you one. You can't afford to buy your dream home, we'll rent it to you. So it feels the same. The fact of the matter is, in my opinion, the impact of institutional investors now is way worse than it was in 2008. So I want you to ask yourself, like, can you see what's going on here? And if you can see what's going on here, you let me know. Reach out to me, let me know. Now we need to talk about what you can do if you want to buy a house this year. So the first thing is get your house in order. Make sure that you save at least 3 to 6 months of your living expenses. If you have consumer debt, work towards paying it off. Do not purchase a home if you're purchasing a home to live in that exceeds 30% of your take-home pay. So the mortgage should not be more than 30% of your take-home pay, because you still need to save for your goals. You still need to live, and we don't want you to be house rich and cash poor. That is a nightmare. Also, don't allow anyone to pressure you to buy a home if you're not ready. It has to be the right time for you, and you'll know if it's the right time for you. And if you find out that you can't afford to buy a house where you live, then there's a couple things you can do. You can work towards eventually moving to a lower cost of living area, or consider investing out of state. That's what I did. I wasn't able to leave where I was at the time, and the next best thing was to get some rental property out of state. Lastly, something that you may not have thought about before, if you know someone else who wants to be a homeowner, whether it's a family or a friend, then consider maybe partnering with them. Maybe you buy a single family house together. You have a room, they have a room, and you do, you know, you figure out what to do with the other rooms, if there are other rooms, or you can get a multi-unit property. You both live in one of the units together, rent another out, or you live in a two separate units and you split the mortgage. There's so many ways to slice it. So that's something that I want you to think about. And I want you to be encouraged. I'm going to continue to do everything I can to give you as much information as I can to help you get ready to buy a home and buy it correctly and not buy a bad deal that you cannot afford. That's just the worst thing you can do. And I don't want that to happen to you. So continue to check out the podcast, continue to support, listen, and share. I greatly appreciate every last one of you, and I thank you for listening. Make sure you leave a rating and review. I would greatly appreciate it. It'll take you 5-10 seconds, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.